I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello, this is the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers, episode 5. As we edge another week closer and move past the first round of roster cuts for the 2016 season, I am pleased to say that myself, Stuart Court, has made the cut down to 75, as has the man on the post, Ross Bell. Unfortunately, so did Adam Nathan, so the trifecta lives to fight another day. On the bubble, how are we, chaps?
Great, mate, Vengi, with the Seahawks triplets.
Exactly.
Have you been saving that for 10 days since I dropped you off last time?
I wrote that last night.
I can tell. It's the first time you've been literate in 5 shows.
Right, coming up on this week's episode, we will look at what was said and what cropped up at practice this week on VMAC, as well as diving in on last Thursday night, Friday morning's pre-season offering at CenturyLink Field versus the Cowboys. Then we will give our thoughts on the actual roster cut down to 75, which was finalised last night, and look ahead to this week's final pre-season game and the 53 cut down final roster on Saturday. Wrapping it all up will be us deciphering who makes that 53 at the cutdown this coming weekend. But first, a quick note, a bit of sad news which came out of the Pacific Northwest since we last convened, and that was the news of Mr. Seahawk, Jeff Schumacher, getting some unfortunate news regarding his health. Jeff is someone I have met very briefly on both my trips over to Seattle and seems a thoroughly, thoroughly great guy who seemed floored that we made the trip from so far out to the CenturyLink Field and King Street. His fandom, along with his wife Dee Dee, who's Mrs. Seahawk, cannot be questioned, obviously. So from all three of us here on the Pedestrian Podcast and all of us UK Seahawkers, we send our heartfelt best wishes for the fight you and your family are facing and look forward to hopefully seeing you in November. Anything to add, chaps?
Yeah, just quickly, I mean, some of the Seahawky 12 stuff can at times be a little bit cringe, but people like Jeff are the absolute embodiment of why it's such a brilliant thing. I've been to Seattle and been to games just with my family or with friends, and every single time, no matter who you're with, Jeff and his wife are there with open arms, so welcoming, and really make you feel part of the day. You sort of wish that people coming to English football games could be treated in the same way. But it is the polar opposite, and you do get made to feel like family, and that will always be, I'll always appreciate that massively. So best wishes certainly from me.
Yeah. Bras?
I'm not really aware of Jeff myself, but if he's a fellow 12, then yeah, get well soon. Best wishes.
Yep. Now on to the week that was. VMAC details are a little thin on the ground in terms of practice habits now that camp is over and the season restrictions on the media apparently exist. But it appears that Thomas Rawls' week one status is no longer in doubt, with Pete cementing the fact that the second year running back is ready to roll against the Dolphins on September 11. Michael Bennett got into it again with Bradley Sowell, and that fire is something that is more than welcome. Ross?
Loves it, doesn't he? Loves Absolutely. It. He can't wait for the season to start, Michael Bennett. Just wants to hit some people for real, I think.
But I think the thing that came out of what he said, though, was how Bradley Sowell give it back, but then understood why Bennett was riling up, because he thinks that teammates should protect themselves and each other on the practice field. Adam, any thoughts on Bennett and Sowell?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Look, we'll probably get into this a little bit later, but if you look what happened to Teddy Bridgewater yesterday,
Yeah. Each
one of these players is one snap away from maybe having their career ruined. And, you know, we all talk about the preseason in depth, and ultimately, we know it's a money-making exercise at the NFL, and you can tell the players don't really want it, and they're just, you know, you get the feeling that if the players didn't have to do any practice at all and just play the games, they would for their own safety. So,
yeah. You
know, I'm going to go with Bennett because he's been around the block plenty of times and knows what is and what isn't. So, yeah, he's right. You know, players don't need to be... The last thing we want at this time is injuries.
Yeah, definitely. But I think it's, as I said, it's quite a good thing for Sol to compete to that level so early, so quickly. It's probably why it looks like he's set at left tackle for week one as well.
Yeah, it's a fine line for players like that who are trying to prove themselves against the best guys in order to get in the team, but then you end up pushing it too far and you get, well, piss people off.
Yeah, it's a very fine line, isn't it?
Definitely, and also Michael Bennett's probably extra angry because he's still on the contract he's been on for the last couple of years. Around the new league news wires, a lot of it this week has been taken up by different quarterbacks. You have Colin Kaepernick sitting down. You had Tony Romo was broken again by Arcliffe Averill. And last night, Teddy Bridgewater suffered what sounds like a gruesome and brutal non-contact ACL tear and dislocation of the knee. Just absolutely devastating for Teddy. The Vikings and most who like myself, seeing a good young QB quarterback push a team which seems set to challenge on all fronts. It just needed their quarterback to take the next step. As we just said with Bennett, it reinforces his point that you can't really complain about players getting paid so quickly and so heavily when things like that happen to players. I think Teddy Bridgewater was 22, 23, and there's people who argue that players shouldn't hold out for more money are just a bit ludicrous, aren't they, Adam?
Well, look, ultimately, if Teddy Bridgewater doesn't get to play again, and we all send him our best, and we hope he does, the Vikings are going to have no problem cutting him and leaving him on the scrap heap with all the other players that couldn't quite make it.
Yeah.
So you can't blame these players for wanting to get theirs when they can, you know, especially someone like a Bennett to bring it back around to the Seahawk thing. You know, he's been there, done that, got the T-shirt, got the tape, and the only thing he hasn't really got is the money that comes with it. So absolutely, you can't really blame these guys for looking out for number one when ultimately that's what the teams do, and with absolutely no problem.
Yeah, definitely. Ross?
Yeah, it's a really big shame for Bridgewater because that sounds like a devastating injury. And some of the, read any of the reports of the fellow Vikings players, just like reminds me of when Eduardo at Arsenal had his leg done in and Fabregas is in tears on the pitch and stuff like that. It sounds very much like that sort of injury, which is not nice to hear about. But yeah, it's like you said, it's a ruthless game. If he can't get back, then the Vikings will just cut him and move on. That's the nature of the business, unfortunately.
Yeah, most definitely. But also now that division is Green Bay's for the losing, because no matter what quarterback move they make, it's not going to cover the crack. Teddy Bridgewater's one of my favourite players in the league that isn't the Seahawk. I know you two don't agree with me that he's all what people make out he is, but he is a very, very fun player to watch.
He's a young Alex Smith.
just on that though, guys, I don't know how it seemed to happen, but it seems like if you take out New England, the rest of the good teams, what with the suspensions that Pittsburgh have got, the rest of the good teams are in the NFC this year. And to be honest, what with the Romo injury and the Bridgewater injury, you know, we're going to get an injury at some point and everyone's going to be selfish for their requirements at that point. So at this stage, I'm looking at thinking there's two potential playoff teams and wildcard teams that might fall out the mix a little bit in Dallas and Minnesota as a result this week.
Yeah, definitely. But also, there is something where Arizona now face Jimmy Garoppolo, then the first three or four quarterbacks Carolina face are just absolute scrubs. And we face Brady, Rogers, and all the rest of them all through the season. Friday morning's game anyway. For those listening in North America, us Brits and Europeans have to wait until 3 a.m. to watch a meaningless preseason game. It is brutal. The Seahawks welcomed the Dallas Cowboys into town and came out winners, 27-17. Wilson Twitterson got the scoring started before a Wilson special extended the lead.
Lockett wide to the near side. Russell looking. Russell scrambling, pump faking, still looking. Now he spins out. He's coming to the right. Still looking for somebody to open up, pump fake. He throws to the end zone. It's a touchdown. Touchdown, Seahawks, to Tyler Lockett, who just kept moving around.
As a Wilson special coming from a clean pocket, it must be added, because he just had the coverage was that good for once from the Cowboys. And the Seahawks scoring was rounded off, and Boykin pulled out another of his Russell Wilson impressions with a 16-yard run. Right, now, last week on this podcast, I did question Paul Richardson's chances of making the team. That was quickly put to bed with that. But who else, Ross, stood out on offense for you?
It's the offensive line again. Wilson, we saw last week against the Vikings, was under pressure a lot of the time, and he took some of the blame for himself, but he wasn't pressured that much. I know that Dallas defensive line isn't the best. It's, in fact, one of the worst, but like you said, that the touchdown that we just heard to Lockett, he had all the time in the world. He rolled out twice and they still couldn't get close to him. And all the time in the world. And if you've got someone like Tyler Lockett who just doesn't stop moving, he's always going to find him open eventually.
Yeah, the touchdown throw to Lockett, people are going to use that to talk about the Seahawks offensive line. Just watch that play. Wilson has half of CenturyLink field to move into, which is what he did. He just moved backwards. And he made more of a meal of that than probably he was due. It was fun to watch. And it was all like playground stuff. But
it really worried me when he took that
remarkable job.
When he took that step forward, the first one, and he kind of like realised, oh crap, I can't run this. That looked reminiscent of last season a lot of time, where he'd step forward and then he wouldn't quite get the rollout done in time and just take a sack. But he somehow managed to escape it. And yeah, he had all the time in the world.
Yeah. Adam, anyone for you on offense?
I mean, not obviously I have now coined one of the all-time great catchphrases. But that touchdown was double pocket for Lockett. Because off that first spin move, the pocket actually recreates itself.
Yes.
And he backs the middle of five guys, from which he spins out again, pump fake, and in the corner. I mean, just a sensationally, ridiculously Wilson-y play. If he was that interesting off the field as he's on it, it'd be great. I thought in terms of the general team, yeah, obviously the line was good to watch. I thought Christian Michael looked very good in the second half. I couldn't exactly tell if he was playing against starters at that point. But, you know, as soon as he finds a hole, he's absolutely bursting through it, which is great to watch. A couple of nice runs from CJ Procise. Even Jermaine, JK, a couple of nice grabs. Well, the thing is, if you don't wear your pyjamas, you're a much better wide receiver. And I could tell him this every time. It's not rocket science. I thought he was good. Baldwin looked solid. I thought the offense was pretty impressive, actually.
For me, I think Christian Michael again. Russell Wilson looked sharp as you'd hope he would look 2 weeks out from the season. I think Brandon Williams, the tight end, fourth tight end.
Yes.
He looked really sharp. He looks quite a good blocker as well from things that people have pulled up since last. And as Ross said, the offensive line, the front five, the middle three in particular, Justin Britt might actually be quite a good centre, guys. Let's get ready for that.
Whisper it quietly.
Whisper it really quietly. So that's our offence, defence. Adam, anyone stand out in particular?
Kelsey McCray had two really nice plays in a row.
Yes.
One of them was a breakup on a long pass to Terrence Williams, which I think absolutely gave me the funniest moment of commentary in the history of commentary. I don't know if you guys watched it on the Seahawks or the Dallas one, but the Dallas guy said, well, that's the problem with Terrence Williams. He just doesn't trust his hands. And I'm thinking, for a wide receiver, that is not a good attribute. So I was howling when I was watching that. But yeah, I thought Kelsey was good. I am still slightly worried about the general first-team offense. I think that in all three games, teams have found it slightly easy to go through us. Let's just hope that that's a preseason thing and it's not even a trait that we can carry through to the regular season.
No. For me, the first, there is a very reasonable argument that the offense could be better than the defense this year.
Yeah.
I think with all the weapons, obviously depends when Jimmy gets back, but how sharp Russell Wilson looked as the game moved on, as how strong he finished that season. Tyler Lockett has no ceiling. Doug Baldwin is going to be Doug Baldwin. Obviously you've got Brandon Williams, you've got the young running backs as well. The defense, they haven't, I mean, as we said before we come out, but we'll get into it more later with covering tight ends is still a problem, and this is like the third consecutive season, and teams in the NFL, with how deep they dive on game planning and stuff from, I think, Friday, probably started now, it's going to be something which is going to be pushed upon, but especially by the teams we play this year, with even Green Bay have got a relatively good tight end now, and Jared Cook with Richard Rodgers, obviously got Gronkowski. We're going to have to face Charles Clay, a decent level tight end. And they are just going to be fantasy studs the weeks they play the Seahawks. When with a defense which has been the number one scoring defense for four straight years, to have such a obvious, consistent weakness is a bit strange. So I'm going to put myself out there. I think the offense is better than the defense in 2016. Ross, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. The offense is stacked in every position. The defense is not. It's not changed much from the last few years, really. We've brought a few new guys, kind of homegrown guys, into it. But I think we're just going to have to accept that that tight end issue is the tight end issue. And we, I mean, we shut down Antonio Brown. We shut down the running backs with the run stuffing game. We can't stop everyone on every play. Maybe yeah. It's the one high safety thing with Earl Thomas being alone at the back there.
Yeah, with Antonio Brown, though, we didn't really shut down the offense because... Marcus Wheaton had 1,000 yards.
1,000 yards.
Yeah. Well, we haven't got two Richard Shermans, unfortunately.
No, that is true. Adam, offense better than defense?
It depends how you're going to analyze it in terms of statistics, but I think right now, if you had to give me a two-minute drive and we can be up by six or down by six to win the game, I think I'd rather be down by six with the ball in the offense's hand than up by six against another team.
That is a good
way. I'm not sure I've ever thought that before.
That is a good way of putting it. Yeah, I think I'd agree. Briefly touched on him, Kelce McCray, the trade, I think it was this point last year, the late round pick. That must be one of the more underrated moves that John Schneider's made. Adam?
He just looks really good. I mean, he's great on pass breakup. He looks nice and physical. And you sort of feel that if either, heaven forbid, Chancellor or Thomas went down, he might be able to do a more than passable job in each role, which is pretty positive to see.
Yeah, Ross?
Yeah, definitely. He started last season, didn't he, in the Chancellor role when he was still holding out. And we were slightly dodgy, but I put that more on the Kerry Williams experience, costing us points in those early games. But yeah, he looks really good. He's got the size as well.
Yeah, the weirdest thing with McCray is that it's a good team that saw no position for him in Kansas City, and he's gone and he hasn't missed a beat. He caught up really quickly with the playbook and the style that Pete Carroll and Chris Richard dictate from the secondary players. But yeah, he's really, really impressive, really solid player who, if Cam Chancellor has any contract issues or his leg and knee and hip give him jip in the season, as was just said, it's something that you wouldn't be that worried about, which is again for the defence is a strange thing to say.
Or if Chancellor keeps getting run over by rookie running backs.
Yeah, but it was pre-season, so I think there is a slight asterisk next to that. But yet again, that Dallas O-line does look legit, as does Mr. Ezekiel Elliott and his crop top jersey.
Very strange, man.
Yeah, he is an absolute beast. For Dallas Cowboys, there's that picture now with obviously Romo being out for 10 weeks where Zeke and Dak are next to each other on the bench. It's like, yep.
There's the future, Cowboys.
Where's the torch to pass on? But yeah, that was week three. Now on to a few of your questions. The first comes from James in Birmingham, and he has this to ask.
Hello, Stuart, Ross and Adam. I hope you're all well. First things first, well done so far with the podcast. You're all doing a fantastic job, so keep up the good work. Now on to my question. I understand that the season hasn't begun yet, but Justin Britt looks really comfortable at centre. Do you guys believe he can emulate what Max Unger did in this position? Thanks for having me on this podcast. Hope to see many 12s in Birmingham on Saturday, and go Hawks.
So, Ross, thoughts?
Yeah, firstly, thanks for the question, James. It's a really good one. I think, personally, I've been a quite a big critic of Justin Britt, and I think rightly so. He's been fairly terrible at tackle and guard. He seems to have finally found his feet as a centre, and cutting Patrick Lewis was a bit of a shock to me. Going with Hunt as the seemingly backup centre, that's kind of putting a lot of faith in Britt. And I think he's done a really good job in pre-season. Obviously, we're not seeing first-team defences against him, but him and Russ seem to have a bit of a connection as well. So I'm cautiously going to say he can be as good as Unger eventually. Not this season, but Unger is a... Legend's an often overused word, but he was a very good Seahawk player. So hopefully he can reach that level.
Yeah, I'd agree. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, obviously no one ever coming out of Oregon is going to be called a legend. Nip that straight in the bud. Look, Unger was obviously a fantastic player, and I think he had a brilliant synergy with Wilson and Lynch. The problem with Unger was that, you know, the last few seasons he was missing five, six games a season, which was just annoying. I think Britt, you know, having to move less seemingly is helping him out quite a lot, which I'm not sure that's a compliment or a shout. take it as you find, Justin. You know, give me a shout, see what you think. Look, ultimately with the centre, he's going to be judged as much on how he can call, you know, the blitzer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He is standing in there and blocking for Russ. So I think when the season comes, we'll be able to assess a little bit better his actual value to the team.
Yeah, I think with Justin Britt, it's as we'll get to later, one of the players they cut show how much they think of him at the position and how while he's doing the position. If he could replace Max Unger, probably, because to be honest, I don't think it's that hard to replace Max Unger. It's just that we are still scarred by the Drew Nowak experience at the start of that season. So Max Unger was a steady centre. He wasn't in the upper echelons of at the position, but I think Justin Britt can more than enough stabilise that position, and finally, after 3 years, has found a home on the offensive line and probably saved his NFL skin in the process. A few other questions. Yeah, before we get onto that, actually, I just want to thank James. I'll see you on Saturday in Birmingham with the UK Seahawks Midlands meet. We've got about 25 to 30 people committed and coming. Obviously, a few more stragglers probably joining the party as they did last year. Last year, we had a guy come into one of the bars who was from Seattle.
Oh, wow.
So that was a weird, weird few
went
minutes.
To Birmingham?
Yes.
Of all places.
He was in Birmingham. He walked past the bar and he walked in. And he was in Seahawks. He wasn't in Seahawks colours, but he saw 20 Brits in Seahawks gear. So
wow. That
was quite a weird few minutes. Other questions from the masses. Adam put a post up on the UK Seahawks group yesterday. So from that, we have a question from Dave Bailey asking if the team could look at Terrence Knighton, who was released on Monday by the Patriots, I believe. Adam?
I think he's going to cost too much money, isn't he?
Mm.
I think so. Not necessarily convinced that we've got the cash reserve to pay someone like that, who, let's be honest, had a big reputation, especially going into the Super Bowl 48 against us for Denver. I don't really think he's lived up to it at all. And if we're going to be paying any defensive lineman any money, or defensive players, I'd give it straight to Michael Bennett to cheer him up a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Imagine how annoyed he'd be if someone else came in and got some more money.
Exactly. But also, I think that big body veteran defensive tackle spot has been filled by Tony McDaniel. He's looked quite good in the 2 weeks he's played. They've got Brandon Bryant, who I'll be banging the drum for later, and Quinton Jefferson, the rookie, who fill that role more than adequately.
Yeah.
Without the cost that Terrence Knighton's going to bring. And as you say, he hasn't really pushed on from what was he was a big part of he was a big part of the team that took Denver to the Super Bowl in Super Bowl 48. But nah, I think McDaniel, Bryant and Jefferson will more than adequately cover that. I believe that Adam was also sent one on private means. Adam, what was the question?
So Top Trevor, who is a Twitter listener to us, asked, who do you think this season is make or break for?
Ross?
Ooh, okay. Just off the top of my head, Paul Richardson, he has to really become a big-time player for us this year, I think. Obviously, he's had the injuries. It's now his time to put some stats up as well.
Adam?
This is a bit of a left field one, because obviously the guy has nothing to prove as an NFL player. But as a Seahawk, is it fair to say it's probably a make or break season for Jimmy Graham?
Yeah, it's fair.
I think if he doesn't come back from injury, then that's going to be taken out of his hands and it's going to be a break, unfortunately, and we're going to have to cut ties. But you know, if he can come back and find the form of last year, the back end of his playing days last year, then we could have a top player on our hands. The problem is that if he comes back and is average, I get the feeling that there's going to be quite a lot of resentment towards him. And it wouldn't surprise me if the juice isn't worth the squeeze in terms of his salary and he ends up cut.
Yeah, I think with Jimmy Graham being make or break, I think it does depend, as you say, how much of the field he sees this year. If he plays a part in all 16 games and underwhelms, then yeah, I think it could be a real decision, because obviously that might even be health pertaining as well. Because I think him and Daryl Bevel are the two people where people are just waiting for a reason to bash him, and with the money, they've got a hefty hammer to bash him with. One person for me is also a tight end, although I'm not too sure it's make or break, because I think it's Luke Wilson. He's an undrafted free agent at the end of this season. Obviously, fourth round pick, so it's hit and miss with that for the most part. But I think it might be a case of he is just what he is, and you can't really expect much more of him. But if Jimmy Graham does miss time, obviously Brandon Williams is there. Nick Vinette looks like he's going to miss a couple of weeks. It'd be his time to step up and just put the stats on the board and become a real viable option and make a decision on Jimmy Graham departure in 12 months a little easier. But I think Luke Wilson, especially with being a free agent, is someone who could feasibly have a make or break year, definitely in Seattle, maybe league wide as well.
Yeah, I think you get what you get from Luke Wilson, but he's got a nice connection with Russ, so it's hopefully he can put some more stats up this year.
I think he's great.
I think
he's unlucky in the sense that we're a run first team and then a two wide receiver very heavily first set team.
Yeah.
But you know, Luke Wilson made some great plays for us. I mean, that play against Arizona,
yes,
in the Beast Mode 2 game, which I think was the first touchdown of the game. It was about 70 yards, and he's just got such great breakaway speed. But I think he's a bit unlucky in the sense that he's never been schemed for in the offense as much as, you know, a Jimmy Graham would expect to be, or even like Zach Miller was back in his days of being a bit of a touchdown threat. So I think he's more unlucky that he's never been put to any level of priority in the offense.
Yeah, but as I said, I think it might be a case of Luke Wilson is with Luke Wilson, it's what you're gonna get kind of thing. So might be a bit unfair, but I can't really think of anyone else outside of, as we just mentioned, Justin Britt, but he seems to have been pretty set at centre. Ross,
maybe Harold Simon,
possibly, yeah, because it does seem a room where the young pups are on the way up and emerging. Deshaun Shedd seems to have the spot opposite Sherm wrapped up. They've paid Jeremy Lane. Ty Smith is hopefully still going to be knocking about in a week's time. But yeah, I think Tyler Simon probably has a more, actually think about it, has more of a claim to make or break than Luke Wilson. But never mind, I've answered the question now. Ross, any more questions?
Yeah, I've got one from Mark Wright on Twitter, which is at Mark Wright UK88. Question for the podcast, how did you all start following the Seahawks and why the Seahawks?
Oh, that's a deep one.
I can go first. Mine's fairly simple.
Okay.
The first game I really remember watching when I was getting back into NFL before picking a team was the 2005 Super Bowl, and we obviously were cheated out of that, so I picked the team that got cheated out of.
That's fair enough. Adam?
My aunt moved to Seattle about 20 years ago, and I've been lucky enough to be fairly regular visitor since then, but especially in the last 5 or 6 years, I started going over much more regularly, and managed to go to my first game. I think it was in Wilson's first season. Actually met Wilson in a hotel, and he couldn't have been nicer about the 20 minutes of his time he gave me and my aunt just having a chat. And I think anyone that's been to a game out there can confirm that once you've been once, it's an incredibly addictive thing to do, and all you want to do is go again and again. So I feel like I've been pretty hooked ever since.
Yeah, for me, it's quite similar to Ross with the 2005 Super Bowl. The first game I remember watching when I started to become a bit of a night owl was a Monday night game or Sunday night game against the Oakland Raiders, where Sean Alexander ran all over him. I was like, that's quite fun. And then 3 days later, I went on kitbag.com. Yeah. Remember that website?
Yeah.
And ordered the 37 Alexander jersey. It's developed and emerged ever since. And 2 years ago, I made the first trip out to Seattle. for the Oakland Raiders game and met a merry bunch of people, FBG and all the rest of them. And obviously, as Adam said, once, you just want to go every week, to be quite honest, if the money allowed. It's an experience like no other. So that's why the Seahawks, as I said, it's just because they were the first team I watched, and it looked quite a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Good question, though. Right, and finally, the president has been in touch of the UK Seahawks, the interim president, he might want me to add. Mr. Sean Wilson has asked that what are the chances of Gresham being brought back with Freese's snaps being a threat to our established and valuable kicking game? Ross?
Well, I thought they were quite high, because I was going to include Gresham in my 53-man roster over Mr. Freese, but you informed me before the podcast started that that's probably not likely to happen now.
No, he posted on Twitter the other a couple of days ago that him and his family were moving back to Texas, I believe. That because the Seattle door basically is not opening and it doesn't look like to be opening anytime soon. So despite Nolan Freese trying his damnedest to spike the ball up the space needle every week, it looks like he's going to get 20 more weeks of chances to do it. So, Adam, Gresham.
I just don't know how anyone can make it so difficult to throw the ball between their legs 15 yards backwards. I mean, surely give me 100 goes, I'll be able to get it right. How hard can it be?
If that's your only job as well.
Yeah, like that is his, on his, you know, resume, curriculum vitae, job, long snapper. Do it right, for God's sake. But yeah, I mean, as I said, I was just watching the Dallas game and there's two long snaps that are practically P-rollers on the floor. And you've nearly killed your kicker. I mean, sort it out.
Yeah. But also at the same time, how good does house kicker John Ryan look? With all the long snap issues, John Ryan just kicked, I think he ran around and then kicked the ball 70 yards. They are certainly pulling their end of the bag and just need Nolan Freese to calm it down slightly.
Yeah.
I am already terrified of Ryan outkicking the coverage, Tavon Austin running it back 700 yards, you know, as he always does, or, you know, kicking it to the wrong side and sending the whole team to Oakland whilst the ball's in Los Angeles. That'd be a classic Seahawk moment, but yeah, kicking the ball a long way.
I put Tavon Austin on my fantasy team solely for the two Seahawks games a season when he turns up to actually do anything.
Well, let's be honest, the Rams give Tavon Austin $30 million guaranteed for that reason. He plays 2 weeks a season, so for the next, he's got 10 games for $30 million, so
not bad work if you can get it.
That team is just continues to blow me away, and not in a good way. Moving on, yesterday saw the roster trim begin as the team went from a 90-man group to 75. Those cuts began on Monday with Brandon Brown out amongst those being released. Defensive end, D'Angelo Tyson. Linebacker, fullback, Kyle Coleman. Wide receiver, Montario Hunter, were also released, along with the waived injured designation was put on wide receiver Deshaun Fox, and Silva Saliga was placed on injured reserve. Obviously, Brown was probably the headliner from that. Any surprise that when he was cut, Adam?
I was more surprised when he joined, to be honest.
After last season,
I think it's probably more chance of Tebow making the Mariners than there ever was a Browner making the Seahawks again. But in all seriousness, I'm not a Brandon Browner fan at all. But I have to say, fair play to anyone. You know, he clearly made a concerted effort and has had a good mental impact on a lot of the younger guys there. But ultimately, asking a guy to change his position at 31 years old is a bit of a reach. And you know, he's clearly a very important person to a lot of the guys there, and I would like to think that he's sort of done what they hoped he would do already in terms of mentality thing going into the season. So hopefully it's worked out for everyone, and he can find a new team to give away penalties for.
For me, the football team I support over here the last couple of years have signed Kevin Kilbane and David Prutton in the summer, and about three games into their career for the football club, you've just stood there and gone, yep, the legs have gone. And that's exactly what it was when you watched Brandon Brown in the first couple of weeks. He was playing with the thirds at last Thursday, and
he couldn't get on the field, could he?
Yeah, but to change position, and the things that made the physicality and the athleticism which made him good in his first stint here is just not there anymore.
No.
In Brandon Brown, it's just mother Mother Nature has caught up with him and all the rest of it. So it wasn't much of a surprise to see him cut, especially with the emergence of people like Tyvis Powell. Ross Browner?
Yeah, just echoing what Adam said, I think he was brought in mainly to be that, to show the young guys what the LOB is all about and what it takes to be a part of this defensive team, because a lot of them would have, well, two or three of them would have come through since he's been gone, so it's like a bit of a mentoring type role, I think, and that's fine.
Yeah, and also if Tyvis Powell and Ty Smith and Deshaun Shedd have beat him out so convincingly, as you say, it's a good thing that maybe the tutoring he's been doing since April, May, whenever he come back, is for the long term benefit of the team more than his sticking around and being a part of the 53 would have been. Anyone else among that first wave? Tyson, Coleman, Hunter, who was trying his hardest to be cut, it seems, at times.
No, they all seem fine to me, I think.
Deshaun Fox is one to watch because, as I think Jared Stanger pointed out, the designation for that is no longer 6 weeks. It's basically 3 weeks, and then you get 3 weeks to decide instead of 6 weeks, and then 2 weeks to decide if you sign them and stuff. So it's like a different pup list. They keep changing these rules, the PA and the NFL. So then the cut to 75 was completed last night, with the waived injured designation being put on George Farmer, running back, and then defensive back Trevon Reed, defensive end Josh Shirley. And somewhat surprisingly, and it avoided my attention weirdly, even though I read his name, wide receiver Kevin Smith. All will move on to the injured reserve list if they clear waivers later on today. Adam, Kevin Smith is on the injured reserve.
Is he on IR or has he been completely cut altogether?
Wait, the waived injured designation, apparently, if he clears waivers by end of business today, he's going to be on the IR list in some form. But it's a weird... I don't really understand the full designations now with how it's changed. I don't think IR is season-long anymore. You can bring them, a couple of them off at certain points during the season, I think, now. So
I think if we can get him on there, then that's good. I mean, he showed a lot of good flashes last season. To suggest that there might be a player there. It's obviously unfortunate when someone gets injured at this time of the year. And, you know, always better to have someone on your injured reserve list than on someone else's roster.
Yeah.
So if it ends up like that, then great. It obviously is quite a surprise that he was cut at this stage when there's still quite a few wide receivers that look like they're fairly certain to be cut in the next round. So obviously it's a serious enough injury that there's no chance of him playing for a little while.
Yeah, as we said in our conversation last night, it gives those people like EZ and Kenny Lawler and Goodley and all the rest of them a full game, basically, to get a full game of snaps. And if not prove their worth in Seattle, definitely prove their worth across the league. Also, flat out release were linebacker Kayshaw Neely, who was signed just before we did our last podcast, so that was a short stint. linebacker Pete Robertson, sixth round pick from 2015, and Spark God, offensive guard Christian Sicoli, and 2016 seventh round pick Zach Brooks was cut, along with Patrick Lewis, who started 9 games in 2015 for the Seahawks, and really sorted out the offensive line issues. So that was quite a surprise, Ross, with Lewis being cut.
Yeah, that was my main takeaway from all of that I thought. If Britt doesn't work out, what are we doing then? We're going to go with a rookie at centre. Surely it's better to keep someone like Patrick Lewis around and you know what he can do. But he's been with the third string offense all season, which is probably pointing to his release, really.
Yeah, definitely. Adam?
Surely Lem Jean-Pierre is still stinking around somewhere back if needed in emergency centre. There's obviously something they don't like about Patrick Lewis, the player, because they always seem reluctant to play him.
Yeah.
Did he not get released last year at this stage as well or something?
I think so.
So there's clearly something they don't fancy about him. And, you know, I'm never going to apologise or be disappointed in a team that thinks it can do better in any position. So if they saw him as just a role player they can improve on, good luck to them. And if they're wrong, I guess they can bring him back. So can't see it being much of an issue at this stage.
Yeah, I'd agree. Lemuel Jean-Pierre, by the way, Adam, is a Detroit Lion. He's the backup centre for Detroit, apparently. Zach Brooks was a bit of a strange one because he missed the first couple of weeks of camp. Only got about 10 snaps and he's been cut, so he clearly did not make a very lasting impression on the Seahawks coaches and Sherman Smith and all the rest of them. But yeah, for me, the biggest surprises are Smith, Lewis and Brooks. Smith's just seemed to be a lock. I hadn't realised that he was injured to any sort of severity, so it was a surprise. And it kind of passed me by until you exclaimed, wait, 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 on our conversation last night, Adam. But yeah, the cut to 53, for those interested, comes on Saturday, 8 days before the regular season opener at CenturyLink Field against the Miami Dolphins. But before that, there is yet another preseason game and yet another 3 a.m. Friday morning start. At Oakland, at Oakland, for the fourth consecutive year, we end our preseason, a reunion with Malcolm Smith, Kenny Norton and Bruce Irvin, amongst others. When you do watch the game, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, whichever day, who will you be watching for, Ross?
It's quite hard to tell because this is going to be, I mean, I think one of you two said yesterday that if we see Doug or Russell for more than even the coin toss, then we're going to be disappointed. I can't even think of a name, to be honest. I think the roster's fairly set and anyone that's kind of on that bubble now is just going to be cut, basically.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But Adam, anyone for you?
It's a broken record a bit with him, but I would like to think that Jordan Hill can play, look good, and get himself on the 53, which is where I think he will end up. And then I think it ultimately depends on how many receivers they're going to take, because if you assume that Baldwin, Curse, Lockett, and Richardson are surefire locks, and I think McAvoy is probably going to be a lock as well.
Yep.
If they're going to take a sixth, then the game becomes interesting. If they're going to take five, then it's fairly irrelevant.
Well, on Tanner McAvoy, he played a bit last week at tight end. Apparently, he's practiced the first 2 days of this week at tight end. Obviously, with injuries to Vanette and Jimmy still not being risked at this juncture. So, it could feasibly be that it's five tight ends with McAvoy being like a flex option. And even Jimmy Graham, we could feasibly have two tight ends this season. He'd line up at wide receiver more often than not.
Revolutionary. So,
but yeah, for me, it's the running backs, Collins and Prosize. With Michael and Rawls seemed set as to be the 1-2 punch to a certain extent. You want to see what they can offer. A third down is out of the backfield kind of things. Because obviously, the starters aren't going to see any of the field. As I said last night, if Wilson, Baldwin and Lockett and Chancellor Sherman Thomas do anything more than the coin toss, then there will be swear words coming from this part of England. But yeah, outside the running backs, I've just mentioned McAvoy, Lawler, Kaysen, if he's healthy, I'm not too sure what his health status is. Then it's just all about the backups on the O-line, defensive line. Eric Pinkins probably is in last chance saloon. Then you've got Ty Smith and Marcus Burley for the nickel spot, behind probably Tyvis Powell and Jeremy Lane. So it's all about the backups, as Ross said. So it'll all sort itself out. 48 hours after the game, the roster cutdown will come. So here, quickly, we're going to skim through a few position battles for mostly depth and give our vote on who we see sticking around. I have gone to the arduous task of putting 53 names on a Word document. So the quarterback position is pretty set with Wilson Boykin. Do we both agree?
Yep.
Yep.
Running backs, five running backs. I've got Collins over Pope. Adam?
I think that's how it will end up. I think Collins looked a little bit better against Dallas than he did against Kansas, which wasn't difficult because he was running forwards as opposed to backwards. it would be really nice if we could stash Pope somewhere on a practice squad. I don't know if you normally keep running backs on practice squads, but he looks like a player who would be ashamed to let go of.
Yeah. Ross?
I'm taking Pope, and Collins is going to go bye-byes. Pope has got a nice story, and I think he's this summer's Thomas Rawls. Maybe not quite to that extent, but the undrafted guy is performed. I'll take him. Collins has looked terrible.
Yeah, with Pope and the Rawls thing, was it Rod Smith was an undrafted running back? We had him, stashed him on the practice squad, and I think the Cowboys picked him up. I don't know if he's still there. But yeah, I think Pope will be unlucky, but as I said, I think on the last last podcast. He's not a very good pass blocking running back, and with Seattle, when
we do need all the blocking help we can get.
You need all the blocking help you can get. Yeah. Moving on to wide receivers, got six with McAvoy and Lawler making it over Kaysen. Williams, obviously, as I just mentioned, McAvoy could easily be a fifth tight end as well. Any qualms with that, Ross?
I don't know about Lawler. He looks small for a wide receiver and doesn't look particularly quick for me.
No, but he catches everything for the most part. His hands, especially in the red zone. If you go back and dig up some games from Callum Goff last year in the red zone, he is just a demon in the red zone. Some of his catches, I can't remember the game it is. So he just puts on an absolute exhibition. Adam?
I don't know where the position will be made up, but I have a hunch they're only going to keep five receivers on the books.
Okay. So McAvoy for you then, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah? Right, onto offensive line. I've got 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I've got Will Persiak making it, Terry Poole making it with Reese Orihambo and someone else being cut. I can't remember the other guy. But yeah, Adam, do you think Orihambo will make it?
Well, you only want to cut him because you clearly can't say his name.
Yes.
I think he's going to make the team, and I reckon Paul is going to miss out.
Agreed.
This has been a well-established fact since we drafted him in the fourth round, and I was doing a live cast with Pro Football Spot and could not say his name, so just called him Reese for 3 hours. But Terry Poole, I think Terry Poole, it seems that he was not a Seahawk last year. He seems to have put his head down when he's put on IR quite early, and he's clearly cut weight and got the message that they tried to send him last year. So I think at right tackle to back up Webb with Gilliam probably being a swing guy, because somehow he's gone from being the starting left tackle to being a swing guy in 6 weeks of camp. But yeah, Persiak, I think, because he can play centre, he can play guard. And if it happens to Britt, you don't want it just to be a rookie fifth or sixth round pick, whichever what Joey Hunt was. So that's why Persiak's in. Ross, any qualms?
No, not really. I think I would take Odiambo over Poole, personally. But I don't know. I think they've kind of... The time's run out for Poole, same as it did for Sicoli.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Defensive line, I have got 3, 6, 9 with Brandon Bryant, the undrafted free agent guy, making it over Jordan Hill. Ross?
Yeah, I like it. I like that you've put Marsh as a defensive lineman as well. I've seen a lot of 53 rosters where they've got him down as a linebacker. I'm hoping to see more hand in the dirt, rushing the passer.
Yeah, definitely. I just think it suits his makeup and skill set more than being an outside linebacker. Adam?
I'm going to flip your prediction there and go Hill over Bryant.
Yeah, well, is that just because of experience? Or...
Yeah, I think Jordan Hill's a really great player who hasn't had a chance to show it because of injury. And I would be disappointed to let him go because we've seen... I'm always going to trust what I've seen. Yeah. And I've seen it with Hill. And at this point, where I don't think pass rush is particularly our best position at all, I want as many of those guys that have done it as I can get.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I really do think that will be the decision they make as well. I think it will be a Bryant or Hill decision. Linebacker gone with 5. KPL beating out Pinkins and Steve Longa, although Steve Longa's more a middle linebacker. Pinkins is probably going to be after spend another year on the practice squad if he's still eligible. I think KPL, despite not looking great as with opposite what I'll give with Jordan Hill, I think his experience will tell, and what he's done for him in the short spurts of starts he's had, I think KPL will beat out Pinkins, because Pinkins hasn't shown up any sort of amount in the first few weeks of pre-season. Any qualms, guys?
No, those linebackers look set for me.
Yeah. Defensive back, obviously we've got the LOB, but backing up the LOB, I've got Darrell Simon, Ty Smith, Kelsey McRae and Tyvis Powell. Marcus Burley's the big name that I've left out of that. Do either of you see him making the team?
I think Powell's played himself into that more than Burley has played himself out of it. I think he's been all right. But yeah, Powell's shone in the games he's played. So McRae, Smith and Simon all seem fine as well.
Yeah. Adam?
I think Deshaun Shedd being your starting right cornerback, leading to Lane being your nickel guy, will mean that Burley probably isn't needed.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously, as say with Bright to a certain extent, it's a drum only banging with Ty Smith all season until I'm proven right for once.
Just on the LOV, is that now a three-man stable? Can anyone can Shed work his way into the LOB?
Well, I think LOB is just basically the starters. So you've got Sherm, Cam, Earl, Deshaun Shed and Jeremy Lane. That's okay. Just the LOB. Legion of Boom, Mark 1, left when Brandon Brown left for New England. Also, go back to the cuts, 75 cuts. How many teams in the NFL can cut a two-time Super Bowl winner in the third week of August? Mental. Also, there is obviously practice squad will be announced in the hours once the cutdown is. That obviously needs 10. There's different designations they can put on players in terms of experience. So people like Pinkins and even like Ty Smith, probably, if he doesn't make it, Doug McNeil, EZ, could feasibly end up on that list of practice squad. Also keep an eye out for trades in and out. Past years I've seen the team trade Kevin Norwood and Christian Michael for throwaway draft picks, while Marcus Burley and last year Kelsey McCray came in for seemingly meaningless and minimal draft net worth, but especially in Kelsey McCray's case, as we touched on earlier, have really shone quite brightly with moves that John Schneider has made. So a few days come in if you like a roster churn. Next week, on September 11th, the regular season finally kicks off. Gordon Wright has to finally retire the preseason, his meaningless drum, for another 12 months, and the road to another hopeful Super Bowl appearance begins. Before then, we will be putting another podcast together as a season preview. We have each entered a few different predictions, from things to win-loss record, team MVPs on both sides of the ball, to yardage totals and the main protagonist for the 2016 Seahawks. This is also now a contest for paid-up members, and once I get the email list, I'll be sending all the access information to those who are paid-up members in the coming days. On that season preview podcast, we will also review the shape of the 53-man roster, see just how wrong I was, and also we'll offer another chance for one of our members and listeners to send in a few questions. Before we go, one of us, Adam, angered a very specific set and Twitter army with a harmless, inaccurate review of a 30-second Wilson quote.
Didn't you ever?
Seem more like a short circuit in the mains of our starting quarterback. Adam, do you want to divulge?
So, a word of warning to all of you lovely people out there. Do not upset the Russell Wilson family. Ever.
They're an angry bunch.
They are an angry, crazy, crazy bunch who do not take no for an answer. So, if you do want to maybe criticize him for being potentially a robot, if you do want to suggest that, you know, wouldn't it be nice if he was a bit more personable, a bit more interesting? No. Keep those thoughts very much locked up, because expressing them, especially on public forums, will get you absolutely nowhere.
But like, it is okay to love Russell Wilson, the football player, the Seahawk, while being completely exhausted by his shtick, to a certain extent.
That's exactly how I feel.
That's exactly where I am as well. And I think even with brain is probably about there as well. But unfortunately, the fanboys have clearly got the same robot gene that's taken the loaf out of their head and stuck a machine in there.
Yeah, it's like, because like, no one on this podcast or anywhere is doubting what he does on the field, obviously, and no one is criticising or bringing down the charity work he does and all the weekly visits to Children's Hospital and stuff. But come on, Russ, man. What was the quote you had yesterday, Adam?
It was something about he just wants world peace and he just wants peace in the world.
All right, Miss America.
The thing is, as Stuart says, we all absolutely love the guy, but you know, your quarterback has the opportunity two or three times a week to be very interesting and have an open forum to discuss actual issues. And if you look at Sherman, who did his weekly press conferences last year, you'd actively look forward to them because it's an interesting insight into a guy, a culture that we didn't know that much about. And it's just a shame for me that Wilson is a guy who probably would be so interesting if he switched off the machine, but he never chooses to. And you almost feel like you're missing a trick because, you feel that there's a lot more there than we get to see, which is a shame.
Yeah,
definitely. But I think we've definitely opened ourselves up here. The Twitter mentions are going to be overflowing with hate and pointing out.
Just a normal Wednesday for me then, Stu.
Preview podcast coming next week. Where can they listen to us this week, Ross?
You can listen to us on our website at thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. You can go over to iTunes and to search for The Pedestrian Podcast, and while you're there, hit that subscribe button and leave us a rate and review, 5 stars, please. Like two lovely people have done this week. We've got 2 reviews here. 5 stars, one by Dazza Shippo, says, great listen, very informative, keep it going, guys. And one from Blue Jay Rover, a great look at all things Seahawks from a UK perspective, gets better and better by the week, keep up the good work. So thank you very much for you two. Just on the iTunes reviews and on our Podbean site. On the Podbean site, you can, of course, if you like what we do, you can leave us a tiny donation. £1. If all of you left us £1 a month, that would be incredible. We could, of course, buy lots of prizes for you for leaving iTunes reviews and things like that. So if you want to do that, just head over to the Podbean site and there's a little Buy Now button on the side. And for just £1 a month, we can buy prizes and giveaways and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm improve what we put out on a weekly or semi-weekly, bi-weekly basis. But yeah, as I was, I think Ross, you said it was 10,000 hits. Was that what you said?
Yeah, I mean,
for the website, it's just absolutely farming. The hell is going on? It's not just. It's what? Have you just got one of those like pecking things where you just press F5 repeatedly?
we've had listens from places like Israel, Australia, Germany, Ireland, and we've got one listener in Luxembourg, so hello to you.
I'm quite confident I know that. I think that is Nick. Just one quick note, obviously I mentioned earlier the meet in Birmingham. There's also something that Nicky is organising with Connor over in Dublin. I think pre and post game, the Boston College Georgia Tech game at the Aviva Stadium, which I was corrected on from a couple of weeks ago. So if you're in Dublin on Saturday, I think the game is, and you see a group of Seahawks and you feel left out, go and join. I'm sure they will welcome you in, unless you're wearing a San Francisco jersey or an Oakland jersey for the older generation. But yeah, as always, thank you so much for listening. 10,000 hits is absolutely bonkers. Adam Nathan's ego is out of control. But yeah. until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast. Enjoy the game whichever time of day you watch it. Thank you very much.
Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.